Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking about antiques and collectibles with our guest today. She is Shirley Bauman, back with us once again. Certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. We're going to be talking about appraisal fairs a little bit and take your questions about your collectibles as well. What do you want to know about your collection? Do you have any questions about appraisal fairs? Join in. Give a call. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And if you've got some photos of your collectibles, post them there. And Shirley Bauman, welcome back.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here.
Great to have you back with us. When I think about appraisal fairs, I think about Antiques Roadshow, and that's an example of an appraisal fair.
That absolutely is. I guess it's the grand dame of the appraisal fairs. And while you mention the name, if you're going to have one locally, don't call it the Antiques Roadshow. That's copyrighted. You get in trouble. Call it a heirloom fair, appraisal fair, something else. And what that is just like you see on TV. People bring their things in, and an appraiser gives them information.
Are there a lot of appraisal fairs going on?
Across the country there are, and I have done many of them in my time. For different organizations, I've done for historical societies, for an event that they want to put on for their membership, or for the community at large to promote the historical society. I've done some for home and garden shows where they want to draw in people for have another reason for somebody to come to their show. I've done them for fundraisers, for like hospitals and libraries, those organizations that are always looking for ways to raise money.
How is it set up, or who sets it up? And then once people, I'm wondering, how long do I have to sit there and wait with my little box of whatever?
Of goodies, yeah. It can be an issue that way. But just like the big guys do it, it's a great opportunity for people to call in ahead of time and get a time. Come between 10 and 11, between 12 and 1, and then you don't have to wait all day long. Because some of those can get to be quite busy.
Yeah,
I know Milwaukee Public Radio, or Public Television, does one every year that's huge. And it is an all-day event, and they have many, many appraisers come. Some of the ones I've done, I've been the only appraiser, and they're much smaller affairs. So you don't have to go to those great lengths. You can have one or two appraisers in. Of course, you've got to realize that you can only do appraiser can maybe only do about 15 or so an hour. If you look at 5 minutes per person, that's 12 in an hour. So some don't take that long, and some maybe a little bit longer. So, you might average about 15 an hour. So if you have one person and you're doing a three-hour event, that's only 45, people perhaps.
So what are the signs of a good fair, and how do you know you're going to trust the appraiser?
Well, it's a good idea to look at the credentials of your appraiser. Some appraisers, locally, you might find someone who is an antiques dealer who specializes in one thing, Red Wing Crocs, clocks, whatever it is. And that person can do a great job at talking about those items. But when you have, you're letting people bring in a lot of different things, you want to make sure that they're a generalist and have experience and hopefully some kind of accreditation and education behind them, and talk to other people who've done appraisal fairs. And the other thing I want to mention here, it's real important, is these events are mainly for entertainment and information. They're not for official purposes.
Yeah.
If you have an estate that's being contested, you have to insure things, those kind of things. You want to make a donation, and you have to get the deduction amount verified. That's not what these are for. So you can use someone who might be only versed in one particular collectible at an event like this, because, like I say, it's entertainment and information.
So you mentioned that it can be a fundraiser for organizations. Mm-hmm. A lot of people listening today are parts of organizations and may have in the back of their head, I wonder if we could do that in our community. Can there be some money made in this?
There can be, but you have to plan it out well. You know, your appraiser, unless they're a part of your organization, are going to expect to get paid for their time.
Sure.
And their expertise, of course. And so what I recommend for people is to get a sponsor for the appraiser's cost, if you can. Find a media sponsor that can help you promote the event. And then, you know, muster your volunteers to get the word out. You want to then charge a fee per item that people bring in. And very often we have people limited to three items, and they can pay X amount per item or three for such and such, maybe, you know, $10, $15 an item or three for 30 or that kind of thing. And then you, if you're doing that, you're probably going to want more than one appraiser, because you need to get your enough going so that you do make some money. And then organizations often sell food and beverage in addition to that. So while people are waiting, they might have a sandwich and a drink.
Sure, makes sense. Or as you say, if it's a garden, you mentioned a garden club, that could bring people there then to see the other things going on and maybe buy some of the garden things, for example.
Exactly, exactly.
What's a reasonable fee to have something looked at?
Appraisal fair?
Yeah.
Like I said, a lot of people charge $10 an item or three for 25 or $15 an item and three for 30. If you get enough people and you've got a sponsor for your costs, then you can make some money on that. Now, in addition, I do want to mention a lot of times we have, like from the libraries and hospitals, we have they might have a special program. Wine and cheese reception the night before and have someone like me come in and be a speaker. And so for their people who can afford to come in and pay for the reception and have kind of that special treatment.
Sure.
And maybe at that point they give people a chance to bring one item, depending on how big it is, or have a drawing for people who can bring an item.
Okay, so there's some really good possibilities there. Rebecca posted, I think, on Facebook that she had a set of wooden golf clubs and a leather bag and the old golf clubs, wondering if they're worth anything or they're collectible. She says it has a scorecard from 1947.
Golf clubs are collectible. There are a lot of golf collectibles, and we did talk about some of this last time when I was on. We were talking about sports collectibles. It matters the condition they are in, the maker of the golf clubs. The age sounds like you probably have something, if they're in good condition, that could have some value. I'm not an expert on that. That's why last month we had Lee Dunbar on with us, because she is an expert in that area. Definitely they are worth something, but I can't tell you what. Of course, it matters if it's a full set, a partial set, if they're matching set, that kind of thing.
Where does Rebecca go for that?
Well, I would do some Googling on collectible golf clubs and look at your period, for the 40s, and obviously they were made before 47, I would guess, unless the card was put in later. And start looking around for that. There are a number, you know, sports collectibles in general are popular, so you will find some information that way.
Meg posted on Facebook that she went to the Antiques Roadshow in Chicago a few years back. What she brought was worth less than what she paid for it. That was disappointing, but the experience was fun.
The Antiques Roadshow is fun. It's a big spectacle. And everybody's there doing something they really want to do. So it's great. As far as that's a very important point that you bring up, that things couldn't be less than you paid for it, because it's a market. Things go up and down. A lot of people assume that the older it gets, the more valuable it gets, and that is not true. It's what's popular at the time. There might be a reason. for an item to be popular at one time and then go down in popularity. Maybe a celebrity collects something, so then everybody wants to collect it. Actually, in the Victorian period, people wanted to collect what Queen Victoria had. And, you know, it's always been that way. And then that waned after a while. So things go up and down.
Well, let's take a call. Dan in Duluth, Minnesota has been waiting a bit. Let's go there. Dan, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Larry, I'm a first-time caller, but I've been listening for quite a while. I really appreciate the variety of your topics on your show, and it's always fun to listen to, you know, new ideas and new things that come up that I've never heard about. And this is actually one of them. I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
One of the things that I wanted to ask Shirley is my wife's uncle brought a tapestry from Germany, either about World War II or, you know, shortly afterwards while we were still occupied there. And I was, it's just a tapestry of four cats. It's not incredibly large. It's probably about 18 by 30. It's not a large tapestry. It sits on a small curtain rod, actually, is what we have it hanging on the wall with. And I just wondered like I said, it's just a tapestry of four cats, and the workmanship is very, very fine. It's very, very good on this tapestry. And I was wondering if you'd ever seen one of those, if you know that might be a collectible or something like that. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Dan.
Well, tapestries go up and down in popularity again, and right now, sorry to say, they are a little bit down. And one thing I want you to look at is to see if it's signed. Right in the weaving somewhere, there might be a name of the person who made it, and that would make it more valuable. So you do want to look for that.
Because we know who's worked on it, correct?
Yeah. Right, right. And that makes it, plus some people are well known for that, and that would make it a little bit more valuable. But not long ago, I was trying to sell one for a client, and we just had no luck in selling it. So at the moment, the popularity is down, but hang on to it. It's likely to come back again. Things do come back around.
It ebbs and flows. It ebbs and flows like everything else.
I do want to make a point. You mentioned coming back from the war. I have colleagues right now, and it's a hard thing. Someone who I know very well has an estate sale who had World War II and World War I memorabilia, and some of it was Nazi memorabilia.
Right, some of it was. I have a very good story to tell that this was actually purchased in a retail shop during that era.
Yeah.
So, okay.
It was not one of the. We do have documentation that it wasn't that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And the point I'm trying to make is that when we sell things, like have an estate sale scheduled, they're a long time ahead, and we aren't able to determine or dictate what our customers have to sell. It's not that we are promoting anything. Mm-hmm. It's part of history. It was their product, their item that they owned, not the seller.
Sure. So look for the name, Dan, see if you can see a name on that tapestry. And if you can, then, you know, you could probably even do a little search online with a name, I would think, Shirley.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
and find
absolutely.
Out a little more. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Karen in Racine, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Karen. Karen, are you there? Well, maybe we lost Karen, or am I doing something wrong? No, I don't think so. Let's go to Joe in Milwaukee. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great, appreciate the call.
I've got a pair of depression glass salt and pepper shakers of the cherry blossom style, and they're in excellent condition. I did have them checked about 25 years ago by Gene Florence, and he authenticated them as being real.
Yeah, real depression glass. Yeah.
These glass, these salt peppers. And I understand that there was like as little as 24 pair ever made. I was just wondering if you have any idea about them.
Well,
I know they're down right now, too.
Yes. depression glass in general is down from what it used to be. I will say, however, that cherry blossom is one of the most favorite patterns. And people love them in the, you know, pink colors and the pattern. So the salt and pepper shakers today, assuming they have white metal tops and not sterling, we're talking probably in the range of, it's not an awful lot, $30, $35 for the pair in good condition. And hopefully you can get more sometime.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So hang on to them, Joe, maybe, if you and kind of hope for the best a little bit, maybe.
That's right.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Joe. Tony in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Tony.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Good. I was handed down a jardiniere from my mother, who got it from her grandmother, and she told me that it was Roseville. It doesn't mean too much to me. I just Googled it and something about it from being from Ohio. It's like 3 feet tall, maybe less, just a little bit less than 3 feet tall, and it has lilies on it, and it's bluish in color. No chips or cracks or anything of that nature. And I was wondering if that's collectible or not.
Jardiniere, what is a jardiniere, Shirley?
Right. A jardiniere is a large planter, flower planter. And I'm assuming, being 3 feet tall, that it's on a pedestal.
Yes, it's two pieces.
Yeah. And so a lot of times we see those separated, or maybe the pedestal has broken and you just have the pot left. But he has both, and that's good. Roseville pottery was made in Zanesville, Ohio. It is collectible. It's a 20th century collectible. Lily pattern, I would guess you're probably talking about the 1940s. There are people who collect just jardiniers. There are people who collect just certain patterns, like the lily pattern or whatever pattern it is, or certain colors. Blue is popular. Again, it is down a little bit because it was doing so very well that it became reproduced. And so the unsophisticated collector is weary of buying it because they might get a reproduction. But it is valuable. They can go, you know, depending again on condition, and you got to look for hairline cracks or any of those things. They can go from several hundred dollars into maybe closer to $1,000.
Oh,
all right.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Shirley Bauman, our guest today, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Well, it's not just coastal communities that need to plan for sea level rise and record-breaking rain. At 1 o'clock on the program 1A, the latest from Houston and what's being done where you live to prepare for the next big flood. That's at 1 on the Ideas Net. Right now, taking a look at collectibles and appraisal fairs with Shirley Bauman. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks again for joining us. One open line at 1-800-642-1234. If you want to, you can send a photo of what you have to our Facebook page. That's the Larry Mueller Show, the title of the page. And you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Lisa sent us a photo on Facebook. The kind of beautiful vase here was her grandmother. She collected things Asian. I'm not sure if it's metal or porcelain. It has a metal edge on top and bottom. It has a tiny circle on the bottom, and it's black. It's very pretty, black with, I would say, white seabirds of some sort, perhaps, flying kind of around the vase.
Right. It's a very nice vase,
very classic
shape and stunning. What you need to do, though, is determine the material first. And if you can tap it very lightly with maybe a knife, a table knife, mm-hmm. very gently, you should be able to hear the difference in the sound and compare it to something else you know to be ceramic or metal. The metal will have a higher pitch sound. The ceramic will be a little duller. You might also be able to look inside and tap it. you know, from the inside and see what you can find out. If you can't determine that, take it into a local antique shop and see if they can help you just identify your materials. I can't tell from the photo, but, you know, Asian works are often metal, and there, you know, could be cloisonné, which is a type of enamel on the metal. And it's a particular procedure where they might put wire around those, like, for example, where those birds are, and then put the enamel inside the wire to make the design. There are other Asian metal works that it could be. Ceramic, it would be painted on, essentially, with the glazes.
Yeah, there we
go. So I can't really tell you anything more about that. And the circle on the bottom really isn't, it doesn't help me in identifying it at this point.
Okay. Frank in Oconomowoc has something for us. Hi, Frank.
Good morning, kind people. I became the owner of a table that was purportedly from a Frank Lloyd Wright house in this somewhat immediate area. It belonged to somebody in the family, and when they moved from the area, they had not used it in a kind fashion and were leaving it behind and said, if you want it, you can have it. Otherwise, it's going out on the front lawn. So I kept it. So I've had it about since early 1990s, but I've never followed up other than just try to look a little bit on the internet. And it's a coffee table that's larger than the typical coffee table, and it has triangular wooden legs on it. How would I go about verifying, or is it even, is there any sense that there would even be something of worth there?
Yeah.
Well, if it is really a Frank Lloyd Wright made table, yes, it would be valuable. And the way I would go about authenticating that is to contact the Frank Lloyd Wright Foundation. You can go through Taliesin up in Spring Green, his home and base there. And there are definitely people who can help through that. And, you know, if it really is one, they'd be interested in knowing that it's there and would probably really appreciate knowing it.
So if you, for something like that, you could go online with this probably and take several photos, close-ups and far away, and you know, just send a range of photos. And
absolutely. Contact them first. Ask them if you can send photos. Like so many of us, we don't just open unsolicited photos because of viruses and all of those kinds of things. So do contact them first so that they know who the photos are coming from, and I request that when anybody sends me photos. And do make sure that they can really see the construction and the design of the table.
And you believe it might even have some potential then for being worthy or valuable?
Well, if it is made by him, for if they can actually authenticate that it is made by them, then I would say yes. Because all of his work, now again, you've talked about it being not lived with kindly, so that condition does make a difference in value. But if it truly is a piece of his work, there's value.
All right.
I get you.
All right.
Thank you for your kindness.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Connie in Portage next. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I have a picture by Atkinson Fox, and I think it's called the Ford. And it's two horses pulling a huge hay rack, and they're by a body of water. And it's like 16 by 20, something like that. And I wondered if pictures have any value anymore.
Now you talk about a picture. Are you talking about a painting or a print?
Well, a print, I think it's a print.
Okay. That makes a big difference. If it's the same item and it's the original painting compared to a print, a huge difference in value. But prints do have some value. Atkinson Fox is a known artist. And there should be, I'm sure there are auction records for his works, both for the prints and the paintings. So when you look it up, you want to make sure. And art is sought after right now and valuable, primarily, again, because you see on TV and in the news and and whatever, that, oh, this painting is worth $50,000. And so a lot of people assume, oh, I've got a painting. It's probably worth something. Sometimes it is and sometimes not. So what you want to look for is works that have sold by this particular artist. Search on the internet.
I don't have a computer. That's a little hard for me.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, maybe a family member can help you with that.
Or the library.
The library, absolutely.
The Portage Library, they'd probably be happy to help you if you know, not comfortable using a computer. I know the librarians are always very happy to help. So you might take a visit to the local library.
So pictures still have some value then?
Yes, they do. Yes.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you very much.
And again, condition is very important. This is a work on paper. So if it's torn, if it's foxed and stained, that's a different story.
Good luck, Connie. Thank you. Chuck in Sauk County, it's your turn. Hi, Chuck.
Thank you. I have a, I guess I'd call it a wardrobe from 1922. It's like a trunk. It's by the Belber Trunk and Bag Company. The last patent on it is 1922. I've had it down to a small appraisal fair, and they said if I could get $50 for it, I'd be lucky, because they use them for end tables and stuff. But it's got all the hangers and everything in it, you know. So, you know, I'm just wondering, I guess from what I've seen on that PBS show, Jeeves, and I forget his name. Anyway, they call it a gentleman's wardrobe or whatever. And like you say, it's got all the hangers and the drawers and everything else in it.
Sure. I know what you're speaking of. And the people who gave you a value are probably right. Again, there are many of them around here. Now, I've seen on television the show out of Las Vegas.
Okay.
Where they had one, and they valued it very much higher than we did here. For some reason, I think not many of them made it out that way. So it does depend a little bit about where you are. And we had a lot of immigrants coming here, and they used them at the time, and they just put them in storage until the next time, and I guess they didn't make them out west because they will give you a different value. But they are something that has gone down as well.
I should load her up and take a ride then. Eh?
Yeah,
that's right.
Go to Las Vegas. there you go.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Oh, that might be worth a trip to Las Vegas then, just for the fun of it.
Just for the fun of it.
John in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Good morning, all. I have a Wedgwood plate. It's W-E-D-G without the E, Wedgwood, and from England. And it says Nanette underneath it, and it's got a couple of imprint stamps. One's Wedgwood, England, and one is 2/28. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes, I can. Wedgwood is not just one subject. What color is your plate?
It's white on the bottom. It's black and kind of a goldish pattern on the top with a... squiggly design. It's got a dish with flowers in the center, and then there's four repeat dishes like it.
Okay.
And
Nanette, that you mentioned, is the name of the pattern. And
You
can look it up under Wedgwood Nanette and then follow through and see what people are selling those for. Wedgwood is long history, company with a long history. And what they're most well known for is their jasperware, which is a porous pottery. And it would be often in light blue, sometimes light green, even lilac, even a darker blue as well. And then it would have white, what we call sprigging on. And the sprigging is very usually classical figures. And that's what Wedgwood was well known for. Again, the earliest pieces are more collectible. Yours is a little bit later. It's made as a china piece. It's glazed, and it's made to be used for dinnerware. I can't tell you exactly the value, but with knowing the pattern and what you have, you should be able to look that up without a problem. Now, if you see it on replacementslimited.com, that's going to be the highest value you can imagine. That's not what you're going to be able to get for it when you sell it. They are a company looking to say, I broke one plate out of grandma's set, and I have to fill the set. And so if you're looking at a resale value, you might look at about one-third of what you see at replacements. So make sure you're looking at sales that have been completed, not what people are asking for prices.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck, John. Thank you very much for calling. And Steve in Manchester, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Salutations. This is somewhat off topic. My grandfather brought back things from Europe from World War One. One of the things was a German soldier's dog tag, larger than ours, and it's complete. And in researching it online, they found there are at least two organizations that make an attempt to take those and give them back to the families in Europe. So I just wanted to throw that out there and let you go. So thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, that's nice.
It's a nice thing to do. Yeah. It is, yes.
Thank you, Steve. There may be another person or two out there that has a similar thing and mm-hmm. probably could look into that. Jerry in Appleton, your turn.
Yeah, hey, I got an old Browning camera that I got from my grandmother. I don't have any information on it, but it's like 4x4 by like about 6 inches. Is there any value to those?
Well, there are quite a lot of them around, and for the most part, the Brownie cameras sell for only $10 to $15. And, of course, condition is real important on those as well.
There were thousands and thousands of those made.
Right, and those were the Kodaks, the early Kodak little box cameras.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Jerry. Angie and Nina, you're next. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a pianist, and I like to collect, like, the vintage song sheets and stuff like that. And I know that you can get them for, like, a box. Like, recently I got one, a box for $15. And I think some of the artwork is gorgeous and everything, but I was wondering, is there, like, a piece of music or something that people are actually looking for? Is there a holy grail of sheet music that I should, like, keep my eye out looking for?
Ah,
well, I don't know exactly about the Holy Grail, but there are variations in values. One of the sheet music pieces that I've found and sold in the past that has been collectible is the original On Wisconsin score.
Oh.
Interesting.
So if you can find, I've not ever run across that one.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, if you could find that.
If you can find some of the older ones. And that was, you know, most of the sheet music will go for between $1 to maybe $5 or $6. That one I sold for $35.
Huh?
So it's not going to be your retirement, but it's worth keeping an eye out for.
There you
well,
go.
Thank you.
Plus the early ones that might have signatures of famous people.
Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that.
We have, I just mentioned to Shirley before the show that I have a friend who has Handel's Messiah signed by Handel. And there could be some value to that. For sure.
Definitely value there. Again, it's important that just to mention, it's important to authenticate those things.
Yep. There we go. Thanks, Angie. Stephanie in Washburn, your turn. Hi, Stephanie.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got more of an interesting story, probably. My grandmother told me when I was little that her great-grandmother told her that we are related to George Washington. Now, I finally authenticated this, that he would have been a first cousin many generations removed from me. And a family member actually owns a gun that supposedly George gave to this cousin, and it's been passed down through the family. It has been authenticated that it is from that time period, but without being able to prove that it was George's, is it more of an interesting story more than having any value?
Well, provenance is what you're talking about here, proving its history.
Okay.
And you might be able to check with, I don't even know what the museum organization for his home,
okay,
whatever they are called, to see if they have a suggestion for how you can authenticate it.
Okay. Supposedly he had left his gun and some of his surveying equipment with our family member all those generations ago, and he got too busy and just never picked them up again. That was before he became president.
Yeah. Well, he was busy,
supposedly,
so that could be right.
Yeah, the surveying equipment got loaned out to an exhibition or a fair and never came back to the family, but the gun did. So I thought it was rather interesting. I thought, boy, if you could authenticate it, I'm sure it's worth a mint.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it would be worth a lot. Maybe, you know, it's possible even that the museum that Shirley mentioned has photographs that could help along that line, photographs of guns that he owned.
Okay,
exactly.
Possibly. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought, if nothing else, it's an interesting story. But without being able to authenticate things, I figured it's more of a value for the family because it's been an heirloom passed down.
Sure.
Yeah.
And a neat story. But thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
And congratulations on Cousin George.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that would help. You know, the fact that you authenticated that, all right, I am a relative. And if you had a photo that happened to show this is a gun that he owned, it still isn't proof.
It's not proof, but that's why you need to contact the authorities on those items.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks again, Stephanie. Irene in Two Rivers, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Irene.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call.
For taking my call. I have what appears to be a water bottle made out of cashew wood. I had it tested at the the forest lab.
Yeah.
It came back with cashew wood, and it's very old, and it is wrapped with leather strapping that still has hide on it. And I can't find anything like it online.
Hmm.
It's not a canteen size. It looks like it might be a gourd, but it isn't. It's made out of wood, and it's rather large, about maybe 12 inches tall.
Okay.
Don't know anything about it or what, where I even might go
to look. Yeah.
Well, that's something I haven't seen either. You know, every time I'm on the show, there's usually something that stumps me. And that is one of the things. If you have the ability to post that photo on the Facebook page, maybe one of the listeners has seen something like that and might be able to get you.
Can I do that after hours because I'm at work?
Sure.
Sure, yeah. Just post it up to the Larry Mueller show.
I would be happy to do that. I would love to know if there's anything, you know, if it's worth anything or what the story is behind it.
How'd you happen to come by it?
I actually picked it up for $12 at a discount store, you know, a resale store.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had it for 30 years.
Oh.
Okay. I would think it has some value because it sounds like something that isn't common.
It was hand carved.
Well, let's put it out to the listeners and see if somebody else out there has one of those and knows more about it.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Shirley Bauman, our guest. She is the owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at collectibles and appraisal fairs today with our guest, Shirley Bauman of Heirloom and Appraisal and Estate Services. She owns Bauman Auction Services as well. And we have links to her businesses on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show if you want to take a closer look. You can join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I'm just going to go back to Facebook for a minute because Mary sent us a photo of some dishes that really quite pretty, and something you were talking about earlier, I believe.
It's a picture of the Wedgwood china that she has. And again, it's blue, and it's got that white relief applied to it, and that is called the sprigging. And I would like to mention that Wedgwood, true Wedgwood, does not have the E in there, W-E-D-G-W-O-O-D. So if you have something and it actually has the E in, it's not genuine. And I assume this is just the way she typed it, because this would be the common way people would type this. This, again, is dinnerware, jasperware that might be what I'm talking about. This is jasper blue color, but the actual jasperware is porous and not glazed.
And so would it have value, or would it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
This does have value, not as much as it did, but all china and dinnerware sets are down in the collectible realm, because anybody who's still collecting this dinnerware wants to use it, and the young people want it to be able to go into the dishwasher and microwave.
Yeah, there we go. We have Brad from Minnesota emailed to say that in today's mass manufactured, market-saturated world, is there any item or items made in the 80s or after where you might foresee it being a future collectible?
Boy, I wish I could tell you what that was.
Yeah.
I don't know how to see the future, but just in general, when things are made to be collectible, and think of Beanie Babies or collector plates, they are made by the thousands, tens or hundreds of thousands. And those are not going to be collectible, certainly not within our lifetime. So you want to stay away from things where they say, buy this, it's a collectible. I mean, that's...
it's not.
It's not, right. The things that do become valuable are generally those that we don't suspect to be such, things that people don't keep. And boy, 50 years from now, there's one of those. I remember that. I haven't seen one of those in decades. That's the kind of thing that starts to become valuable. And maybe advertising from a well-known product. Coca-Cola is a good example. Everything Coca-Cola seems to be eventually collectible. Of course, you know, the newer items are not going to be as valuable as true old items, but you know, advertising is hot right now, and so that might be something you're going to think about. But anything that's made to be collectible isn't. And again, brand names can you know, knockoffs are not going to necessarily ever be valuable, but maybe the genuine article will be eventually.
Dan in Green Bay, your turn now. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, hi. First of all, your sheet music question before, if you can find original Civil War sheet music with, you know, famous generals and battles up to even immediately after the Civil War, that's very valuable.
Yes, you're correct.
I'm a poster collector. I also collect antique maps. And I wonder what you think about paying the price to get things like that linen-backed.
Well, I think in some cases it is appropriate, especially if you're, like in maps, for example, that had originally been folded, because those fold lines, even though you're not folding it anymore, might continue to deteriorate, and that might be a good investment. In general, if you've got good posters and you get them archivally framed, that might be enough to preserve them well. So I think it depends on the item and the cost to get them linen-backed. I don't think everything needs to be done that way, but there might be some that are real fragile that you would want to have done.
All right. Thanks for calling. Lucy in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Lucy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I picked up at a yard sale a couple of square framed pictures. The frame is like a plastic, very ornate frame. And the pictures look like they might be pictures and not painting on textured paper.
And then the back, they look really old. And the back has a label that says artisan, artistic, no, I'm sorry. What was it? Something arts on the back. It's a label. And then there's numbers, and it says 4 pieces on the back. And I'm afraid to take it apart to see if there is a name on the inside. Do you have any thoughts about what this could be?
Well, first of all, I would suggest that the label on the back may very well be from the framer. Or okay. if it belonged to as part of a, like an art guild where you ordered paintings and you could get them from the artist's guild, that might be what that label means. But if there is a signature on it, the only way to see it is to take it out of the frame. And it does not hurt the value of the work if you take it out of the frame. And if it's the original frame, you can put it back. But if you take it okay. out and you can see the signature, then take a photograph of the signature. And then when you put it back into the frame, you still know what the signature is. And you can put that on the back of the work, attach an envelope on the back and keep the photograph in the envelope so you know who the signature is. But that's really the only sure way to research it, is to know who painted it.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. And Suzette in Sun Prairie, thank you for calling.
Yeah. Hi. I have a friend who has a vintage Louis Vuitton traveling trunk in very good shape, and it's numbered. I'm going by memory, but I'm thinking it's somewhat like 3 feet by 2 feet or something like that. Is that of value, and do you have any idea how much if it is?
Louis Vuitton items are quite collectible right now, and just to give the listeners an idea, usually they are in a brown leather with in a gold-colored imprint, an LV, repeated all over that. And so the designer's name is Louis Vuitton. And his items are collectible right now. A trunk like yours, without seeing it, is hard to tell. Again, condition is an issue, and sometimes we think it's excellent, and then when someone else takes a look at it, they see that there's a problem. But they can go into, mid hundreds, $300 to $500, $600, because they are collectible at this point.
All right. There we go. Thanks, Suzette. Ann in Madison, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Larry. I've been collecting all kinds of button pins, like campaign buttons, but not only campaign buttons. I grab any kind of button, and I really enjoy displaying them on a curtain. But I wonder if there's a certain kind of button I should be keeping my eye open for as far as being collectible.
What we're talking about here is pinback buttons, those with a little pin on and people would wear on their lapel. What you want to look for, the older the better. Condition is always good because these were made out of metal. You want to make sure they're not rusting and or the image all scraped off. Again, the old products that people know of, Coca-Cola is a good example, maybe the Nabisco products from way back. Things that you still hear of today, but this is an advertising item from way back. Pins and buttons in the advertising category aren't as valuable as the larger metal signs of the same period, but they still are collectible. And look for products like those that would have a nationwide appeal.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you for calling. Molly in Medford, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much for taking my call. We have an extensive collection of autographs from 1849 that apparently someone named Busby left with one of my ancestors. And the piece that I'm calling about is a letter that was obviously earlier from George Washington. And it's a response to a painter, Robert Pine, an English painter who asked to paint a picture of him. And in the letter, Washington writes back that he he used to be very reluctant to sit for portraits, but now he's like an old horse being led to a trough. And if Payne wants to paint his picture, he would be agreeable. And Pine did paint the picture. It's in the Library of Congress. I've looked at a picture of it. It's not a good likeness, at least not as we think of Washington. But my question would be, how should we go about having it preserved, and what should we do with it at this point in time as far as passing it on?
Well, the first thing, again, I would check with the Museum of George Washington items to make sure it really is authentic. It might have been somewhere along the line reproduced, so it could be a reproduction of an authentic one, so you want to know that. And maybe if you have are in an area where you have a someone who specializes in historic documents, that would be great. But that wasn't really your question. Preserving it. Have it archivally framed.
Have it archivally framed. All right. There you go, Molly. I think that'd be well worth it. Shirley Bauman, our guest today, owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. We'll be back with Shirley right after this look at the news. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at collectibles and appraisal fairs with our guest, Shirley Bauman, who is a certified personal property appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And, you know, just thinking about your two businesses, is an estate sale, you know, like as for an auction, is it better to have an auctioneer for that? Or better to do something else? You do estate sales, and you're also an auctioneer. Is one better than the other for the seller or the buyer?
Well, they are better for individuals at different times. Okay. Sometimes, let's say the seller doesn't want anyone in their home.
Okay.
Or the family doesn't want anybody in their home. The home is going to stay in the family. They're not selling it. They don't want it to be people coming in. Then an auction would be great. If they're saying, we have so much in here, it's breakable, we don't want to move it outside of the home, we want to sell it right where it sits, an estate sale would be the way to go. There are times when an item will sell better in a particular location. Maybe it's a Western artist, and we send a painting by a Western artist out west where there's a specialty auction that would get more attention for that and price, better price for that item than we would here. And so then we would send it to that auction because it's a specialty auction of that type of thing. Whereas if we put it out for sale at a Wisconsin estate sale, it might not get attention because people here aren't familiar with that artist. So there are a lot of reasons why you'd want to do one or the other. And a lot of auctioneers will tell you that's the only way to go. And a lot of estate liquidators will tell you that's the way to go. But I believe there are times where either one is the best choice.
And you do both, and
yes.
So you can give pretty good advice that way. What about for the buyers? If you're here and there's a Western artist and it's not going to bring much here, but you know that it could do well out west,
that's to your favor. Yes. Now, the person who's selling it, whether it's an auctioneer or an estate liquidator, is under contract to do the best they can for their seller.
Yeah.
So we need to place that, know what we're selling, and place it where we can get the best price for it. So, you know, there's the old joke about, oh, you hate to see the person who was at your estate sale last month at the Antiques Roadshow on TV. there are times when, professionals make mistakes as well.
Yeah, there we go.
But those are the kinds of things you're looking for.
Doug in Madison, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Oh, yeah. Hi. I have my kitty cat sit in the be not a full size, but sort of a smaller sized Stickley Brothers rocking chair in my front window that I got from my grandma. And I was just wondering, I know some of that stuff has lost value. I was just wondering if I should, if it has value, I should let my kitty cat sit in and get him a cheap, sit in it and get a cheaper chair for him, or or what the value might be on that little smaller rocking chair from Stickley Brothers.
Well, I put a nice cover on it and let your kitty cat stay on there, but make sure they don't scratch the finish.
Yeah.
Gustav Stickley is the most famous of the Stickleys, and his work is the one that really brings the big high prices. Stickley Brothers are future generations, and they still did the work, and it's probably... Well, I shouldn't say this. I'm assuming you're talking about an arts and crafts style. But once we get to the Stickley Brothers, they deviated from that. They did some colonial styles, and that would not be as valuable as something that's in the arts and crafts style, that simple the style. And you can look up what arts and crafts style furniture looks like. Exactly what the value is of the Stickley Brothers, it's going to be less. Rockers aren't popular right now, but I will say that in general, if it's arts and crafts, it's probably got a little bit higher value here in southern Wisconsin than maybe other states. It's the arts and crafts style has gone down a little bit in favor overall, but it remains a little stronger here because we have so much of the Frank Lloyd Wright influence, which was that mission style.
There we go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Linda posted a couple of photos of wondering. We had an earlier caller who had a water bottle that was made out of a type of wood. I forgot which.
Cashew wood.
Cashew wood. And so Linda, for that caller, Linda has posted a couple of photos of what looks like a water bottle to me, and wondering if it's similar to what our earlier caller had. So for that earlier caller, hopefully you're still listening in, go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and you can see it's a very interesting bottle for sure. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's made out of wood too.
Yeah.
Martha in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Martha.
Hi. I have a couple of diamonds in a setting. My grandparents owned them initially. One of them was my grandmother's engagement ring, and the other one came from Buick in Flint, Michigan, for my grandfather. And my mother had them set in a beautiful setting with just some diamond chips put around them.
Yeah.
She wore them every day. I'm not that way. I would be terrified that I would lose it. So I have it in a security vault. I was wondering, I had it appraised like 6 years ago and it was worth $9,000. And I wondered, are the value of diamonds going up, down, staying the same? If I wanted to sell it, how would I best do that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, first of all, you want to make sure you've got a gemologist taking a look at it. And I need to be very clear, I am not a gemologist, so I can't speak exactly to that. I do know that the larger the diamonds are, the more it holds its value. And you talked about it having chips around it. They would probably not hold its value. If you have someone take a look at it, make sure it's a gemologist. They can test the diamonds. They can test the whatever precious metal it is. And that will make a difference. As far as going up or down, it makes a big difference in the quality of the stone. So that's why you want a gemologist. But you also want to talk to them about it being an antique piece, because just knowing the intrinsic value of a stone is not the same as also knowing the value of an antique piece. So someone who's familiar with estate jewelry is a good person to look for.
And, you know, I remember you talking about the value for insurance purposes being different than the value,
yes,
the actual value.
Yes, the value of what you might be able to sell it for. And thank you for bringing that up, because in the jewelry market, that's especially important. It could be four times or more what the insurance value could be, that much more what the actual resale value is. So make sure you know if you're getting a fair market value appraisal or an insurance value appraisal, because I guarantee the fair market value will be a lot lower.
Okay. Now, the diamonds can't actually be antiques, can they?
Well, they could be.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, because they're like from the early 1900s, late 1800s.
Sure. Yeah. And an antique is considered 100 years old, so that would fit into the category.
Sure. There you
and
go.
They could, the gemologist could tell that?
I don't know that for sure. But they certainly can tell from the settings. You'd have to talk to a gemologist with that. I'm just not a gemologist and not qualified to tell you the answer.
There we go. Thank you so much. And you're in Milwaukee, so you're going to find gemologists in Milwaukee that are going to be able to do that for
you. And that specialize in estate jewelry.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Martha. Appreciate it. Phyllis in Ewan, Minnesota, or is it Ewan, Minnesota?
It's Ewan, Michigan.
Ah! Ewan, Michigan. Well, I was wrong all the way around, but Phyllis, what's on your mind?
Thank you for the program, Larry.
Sure.
I have a set of Steuben glass. I have 12 goblets, large ones, 8 small ones, 8 plates, 8 dessert bowls, and another bowl that's a little taller, the same style as the dessert bowls. Could you please tell me an approximate value and who I would go to see to get this appraised?
Sure. I can't really give you an approximate value over the radio like this. I don't know. For example, Carter is the person who made Steuben glass. I don't know if it's a beautiful Aurine piece in a gorgeous blue color, or, you know, if it's clear crystal. Makes a big difference.
It's clear, and each piece is in a little gray bag.
Yeah. It's just such a different animal from the crystal to the Aurine colors. What you should do is look for an appraiser in your area to give you a value. It will have some value, but the crystal is less than the Aurine and the colors in their glass. If you go to the internet and look for the International Society of Appraisers, I know there's a number of qualified appraisers. There's a Find an Appraiser page. There are a number of qualified appraisers from Michigan that could do the job for you. So go to that. Now, if you don't find anybody near you and on the ISA, International Society, you can go to the Appraisers Association of America, ASA, or the AAA, American Society of Appraisers and American Appraisers Association, and they all have Find an Appraiser page.
All right. There we go. Thank you so much for calling. And let's go to Tom in Muscadet. Your turn, Tom. Hi.
Hi. I've got an old piece of advertising from the corner grocery store, which closed in 1972. It's Welcome Fresh Baby Ruth Candy. It shows two kids under a yellow umbrella with the rain. They each have a Baby Ruth candy bar in their hand, and there's a small dog looking at them. As I say, it's on glass that I cut out of the store entry. And on the back it says, thank you, call again, Curtis Baby Ruth candy.
Huh?
That sounds like a very nice sign, and like I said, advertising signs are hot right now. Curtis is a longstanding company, and Baby Ruth is a well-known candy bar. So you have a lot going for you there. You might have somebody who collects just those products or advertising signs in general. Children are always collectible because they're adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And puppies, you said there's a dog with it. I'm sure
it's 6.5 by 9. It's quite small, but I used to see them in small grocery stores years ago.
Oh, okay. It's a small sign. But,
right.
Yeah.
And it's on the glass, and I just cut the glass out of the entrance window.
Painted on the glass.
I think it was came from the company. It's paper, I think, that it has adhered to it somehow.
All right. Kind of a decal on there.
Right. Correct.
Exactly. Without seeing it, it's hard to value it, but I think you would be at least in the 100 to 200 range.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. General estimate.
You can join us at 800-642-1234. Steve emailed to ask about a letter he received from Arnold Palmer, a menu signed for him by for Steve by Max Baer, and a card signed by Jack Dempsey. Is it worth having them appraised?
Well, here's the thing. I know that Arnold Palmer signed a lot.
Yeah.
And his signature is not going to be that valuable. But I'm not sure. Menu signed by Max Baer. Jack Dempsey. Again, it's... We want to look at to see if there are many items that those people signed. Some celebrities rarely sign things. Some signed a lot. Dempsey is possibly your more valuable of the three that you're mentioning. But I have seen his signature around too, so I don't think it's really rare. What you want to do is go ahead and start looking on the internet for completed sales of those particular celebrities. And then the reason you would get them appraised is if you were either going to sell them or insure them. And the insurance value you want to look at, for example, if let's say the signatures are each worth $50, that's $150. So if you had a loss on those items, would you actually put in an insurance claim? That's why you'd want to get it appraised. So you want to look at your deductible and your insurance and if you'd actually put in a claim if you lost that.
There we
go. So that's what you got to do. Think about.
And I want to go back to Facebook for a minute because Natalie sent us quite a nice photo of a couple of woven blankets that belonged to her great-grandmother. Are textiles something that have any value? How would I find out the worth of these
right.
textiles?
This looks like a really nice woolen blanket in beautiful colors with yellows and blues and reds in them. And from the section showing, it's in good condition, which is very important with textiles because they're often either frayed, torn, or moth-eaten. In the blanket world, the name we usually... What we want to do is make sure there's a label on it. That makes a big mm-hmm. difference. The Hudson's Bay blankets are the most collectible in this area anyway, and those are ones that are like the cream colored with stripes on them. They're not nearly as graphic as these, but Hudson's Bay blankets go in about the $100 to $125 range here in good condition. This one would probably be less. If there's an old Pendleton wool label, that would bring it up to probably the same as the Hudson's Bay. So you want to know textiles in general. Victorian paisley shawls, for example, have some value. The old jacquard bed covers might have value. Quilts, fabulous quilts that are old and well done and elaborate. Do have some value, and of course, Oriental carpets are textiles that are valuable.
Nick in Algonquin, Illinois, what have you got for us?
Well, hi. I heard your show, and I got very excited because I've been trying to find out about this picture for a long time. It is a photograph framed that I bought in Denver back in the 60s of the entire cabinet of President Calvin Coolidge with the original signatures below it.
So it's a signature of Coolidge and the other members of the cabinet.
Yes, a picture of the entire cabinet seated at a table with a fireplace in the background. I assume it's at the White House. And each of the individuals are listed with their signature below it.
Okay, the first thing you want to do is make sure the signatures are authentic. And I know you think, well, back then, of course they were. Well, actually, in a lot of cases, these people had secretaries signing for them. So they didn't have the auto pen didn't come into common use until Kennedy's presidency. But previously, secretaries could sign for them. So you want to, you know, start by looking on the internet to see authentic Coolidge signatures and see how close yours looks to that. Now, of course, people didn't sign it exactly the same way every time, but they're all pretty close. You know, you can, even your own signature is usually pretty much the same. So you can start by looking that way. And after that, you need to look at the value of the signature on the photo. I don't know if any of the cabinet members offhand are also became much more famous than being a cabinet member. They sometimes go on to be more well-known, some more well-known than others. So you want to look at who those people are, and then it's valued on their signatures. And again, a historic document specialist could tell if it is genuine Coolidge signature. It could be worth, you know, maybe $100 or a little bit more. And again, not knowing the cabinet members, if they are again famous people, it could be more.
There we go.
Herbert Hoover was the vice president.
Who was it?
Herbert Hoover.
Okay. Oh.
He was in the cabinet. I don't know which he was, but there are quite a few well-known names in that cabinet.
Check their signatures against those that are known to be authentic on the internet, for starters.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. I remember the old story about Silent Cal, which is probably apocryphal, of the woman who came up to him at a party, and she said to him, "Mr. President, I have a bet with someone here that I can get you to say three words. If you say three words, I win the bet." And he looked at her and said, "You lose." Oh, my goodness me. Well, Shirley, let's go back to your sites and so forth. We have them up on our Facebook page, but what's your...
My websites are up heirloomappraisal.com. And by the way, you can find information about how to host an appraisal fair, just what we were talking about earlier in the program, and BaumanAuctions.com.
BaumanAuctions.com. And your business pretty good these days?
Well, we keep very busy, especially with appraisals. And I will say I do most of my auctions online these days. That seems to be the way to go right now. And we're doing that more and more.
And it's working well.
It's working well.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Shirley. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's pretty much always the way it is when you're on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Great to have her here. And she will be back and be with us again. And I hope you'll join us tomorrow at 11 when we'll be talking about what's happening along the Mississippi River. And then at 11:45, we'll take a look at the ongoing effort to restore Cat Island in Green Bay. That's tomorrow on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.